Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program. 3:46 in the series. It is December 22nd, and this is our Christmas show tonight and tomorrow night. To my right, no, it's not the vivacious Lisa Wolf.
Sure,
she is in Florida.
Of course she is.
Little snowbird that she is.
Why not?
And Mike Costella, our executive producer, is here. In the booth, we have Shante Garth, our producer of the program. And you know what we have, Mike, for you tonight, for all of our listeners?
Well, I know the first one's Fibber McGee and Molly.
It is Fibber McGee and Molly, Christmas show from 1942. Then we have the CBS Radio Workshop, a good Christmas show from 1956, and then Escape, Christmas show from 1952. Before we do all of that, we're going to play our game, Is It Real? Or is it ridiculous, folks? Would you like to play the game with us and win some fun prizes? What do they win, Mike?
They are going to win a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man.
All right. You can call us right now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. What caller should we ask for?
How about four?
All right, number four. Call now, and we'll play the game right after these words.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
Let's get ridiculous, Mike. What do you think?
Sure, why not?
Look who's on the phone line. We have Katie with us. Hi, Katie.
How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Really good. Good to talk to you, Katie. Merry Christmas to you. And, thanks. You're going to play Is It Real or Is It Ridiculous? The star of our program is Cary Grant. Cary Grant. And I'm going to ask you some questions. You tell me if it's real or ridiculous. And Mike will be sort of a lifeline. You ready?
I won't be a good lifeline, trust me.
All right, Katie, here we go. Cary Grant was married 5 times. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
That's real.
Mike, what do you think?
I agree. That is real.
It is real. Got it right, Katie. All right, here's the next one. Cary Grant won a Best Actor Oscar for Arsenic and Old Lace. Is that real or ridiculous?
I'm going to go with real because that was a movie he was in. I'm not sure if it was Oscar-worthy, but what do you think, Mike?
I'm going to say it's ridiculous.
All right, I'll go with Mike.
You're going to go with Mike with ridiculous?
Yep.
It is ridiculous.
Woo!
Here's something interesting. He never won an Oscar for Best Actor. Believe that?
Yeah.
Cary Grant never won. All right, here's the last one. Grant starred in 72 movies and never once played a villain. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
Ridiculous.
What do you think, Mike?
I'll go with ridiculous.
It is real. He never played a villain, not even in one of his 72 movie roles.
Hey, we got 2 out of 3.
Yes, you
both
did.
Both of us, right?
And what did Katie win?
Katie, you have won a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. You can call 855-955-HVAC.
Yeah, way to go, Katie. Great job.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you again. Appreciate you. Katie, a big winner. And, I would have said ridiculous on that one, too. Of course, I looked these up and wrote them. So, but if Lisa would have asked that question, I would have been like, oh, yeah, no, he played a villain somewhere in 72 films.
Yeah.
All right, so our text in line, folks, is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Mike Estella and I would love to read your texts tonight, and always love hearing from our listeners. And this is our Christmas show tonight, tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we have an hour-long radio presentation of Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwenn on the Screen Directors Playhouse. An hour-long presentation tomorrow night when we come back here at 11 p.m. But right now it's time for Fibber McGee and Molly, one of the most beloved situation comedy shows of the golden age of radio. Of course, real-life husband and wife Jim and Marianne Jordan starred as Fibber McGee and Molly. They were from Peoria, Illinois, right here in Illinois. And they started on radio in 1935, lasted all the way to 1959, and they had all kinds of fun neighbors and friends who would drop by 79 Wistful Vista where they lived. There were two spinoffs of this show, Mike. In fact, the first spinoff in radio history was
The Great Gildersleeve.
Very good. The Great Gildersleeve. Also, Beulah. Beulah was another.
I remember this,
that
actually,
too.
Yes.
Wow, Mike, you're starting to become a radio expert.
You asked me that before, and I got it wrong last time, so then I always remember.
There you go. All right, well, we have a Christmas show, December 15th, 1942. Fibber has misplaced $15 in Christmas funds. A lot of money back in 1942. A lot of money now.
Yeah, I'll take it.
I'll take it now. Let's go back and tune into part one now of Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber, McGee, and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Oh, Gee, Oh, Joy. Last week on this program, I mentioned something that caused a good deal of comment. I said, a waxed house is a clean house, and a clean house is a sanitary, healthful one. Do you remember? Well, it seems that quite a few people have not fully realized that when they wax their floors, furniture, and woodwork regularly with genuine Johnson's wax, they are actually doing a good deal more than protecting and beautifying those surfaces. Yes, they're making their homes healthier as well as pleasanter places to live in. You see, the wax seals a surface against dirt and moisture. Dust and dirt do not adhere easily to a wax-polished area. So regular waxing removes many of the sources of germs. And besides, it's so much easier to clean waxed floors, baseboards, and furniture. Especially in these times, let Johnson's paste, liquid, or cream wax help keep your home sanitary and beautiful. About this time of the, quote, happy, unquote, Yuletide season, every husband begins to get that cornered rat look about his eyes. But the squire of 79 Wistful Vista looks even more desperate than that. Something is definitely perturbing our hero. For further details, we join Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
And furthermore, I'm the dumbest, short-sightedest, dim-wittedest, stumble-bummedest, empty-headedest, feather-brainedest droop that ever didn't know enough to come in out of a tornado.
Well, just as you say.
If my head was small enough to fit my brains, I'd be getting telegrams from Ripley.
Well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
They say Washington's home at Mount Vernon has got a beautiful big stoop, but you got a bigger and a beautifuler stoop, and I don't mean anybody but me.
Ah, you just say that.
I got got the IQ of a microbe. I think when I die, I'll leave my skull to the Smithsonian for a doorknob.
How charming.
As dumb as I am, it's a wonder to me I ever got out of the third grade.
It's a wonder to me you ever got in.
You ain't whistling Dixie there either. think I'll give myself back to the Indians. I'm the biggest numbskull that ever...
All right, McGee, I'll admit you're a fascinating subject, but what's this all about?
It's about me, that's what it's all about. I'm the stupidest...
All right. For the sake of argument, let's say you're completely brainless.
Oh, I don't know about that. I'll find it sooner or later.
Find what?
That $15. I was saving it for your Christmas present. I hid it last summer, so I wouldn't be tempted to spend it, and now I can't find it. If that don't make me the weak-minded stomach...
Now, stop pacing up and down. Ours is a beautiful union, and it doesn't need any pickets.
Pickets are still laying there. And I'm getting desperate. Only 8 more shopping days before Christmas, and I've looked every place.
Calm yourself. What man can hide, man can find.
Yeah.
Where do you usually hide your extra money?
I don't usually have any extra money. When I did, I used to put it in the sugar bowl.
Did you look there?
Yes, but I'm using it now to keep stuff more valuable than money.
Why?
Sugar.
Did you go through all your old clothes?
Yeah, but it wouldn't be there. I distinctly remember tucking it away in some safe place. Ah, let me see. Where could I... Hey, hand me that blue vase on the mantle.
Oh, this one here?
Yeah. Oh, no, it ain't here. This is where I've been keeping my cellophane collection. Sure got a mess of it, haven't I?
What are you saving cellophane for?
I don't know. I guess I just got tired of collecting cigar bands. And a string. Seemed to be more future in cellophane. Doggone it, this makes me sore.
Was it in $5 bills, dearie?
It was a 10 and a 5 in a white envelope. And I wrote on the outside of it, "Do not touch until 10 days before Christmas, and this means me."
Well, I'm a pretty good housekeeper, if I do say so myself, and I haven't seen anything of it.
Well, if the worst comes to worst, I'll get an internal revenue collector in here. Them guys could find money in a caraway seed. Now, let me think a minute. If I could just remember...
Come in. Abigail Uppington. Hello, darling.
Oh, how do you do, my dear? And Mr. McGee?
Hi, Uppy. Where's your Santa Claus costume? Or aren't you christening the Kringle today?
I don't go on duty till 4 o'clock, Mr. McGee. But what, may I ask, is the matter with you?
What do you mean, Abigail?
Well, look at him, my dear. He looks positively haggard. I only hope the government doesn't catch him with those Chevrolet tires under his eyes.
I ain't been sleeping good, Uppy. I got pernicious insomnia. I'm worried.
Yes, he hid $15 for Christmas shopping, Abigail. Now he can't find it. For 3 days now, he's been prowling around the house like a mouse after a cat.
You mean a cat after a mouse?
In this house, anything can happen.
I had a case like that once.
Uppy, you sound Aussier than Nelson. What happened with you?
Oh, I was simply frantic because I thought I'd mislaid a ruby and emerald bracelet. But the solution was so simple, it was ridiculous.
Well, what was the solution? Maybe it'll give McGee an idea.
I suddenly realized I had never had a ruby and emerald bracelet. Oh, wasn't that silly?
And I thought I was dumb. Buffy, you're as giddy as a steeplejack full of applejack.
I'm afraid I was at that time, Mr. McGee. You see, I was just a girl out of finishing school and madly in love with a handsome young lieutenant.
Oh, sure.
Well, there was something awfully romantic about those Civil War uniforms, Abigail.
Yes, indeed, they certainly were. I beg your pardon, Mr. McGee.
Don't mention it, Abigail. But what girls' school did you go to?
Oh, Ward Belmont, my dear, in Nashville, Tennessee. Oh, I can close my eyes now and smell the magnolias on the campus.
That's my hair, Uppy. I just come from the barber shop.
It is Magnolia. It's Jockey Club.
Well, do remind me, my dear, sometime to show you the pictures of my class. I was captain of the croquet team, you know.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, call me Virginia and watch me reel. So you all were the captain of the croquet team, was you, honey child?
Now, please, Mr. McGee, I have only the most charming memories of the South, and I found Southern men were always most gentlemanly.
Well, I guess that'll dim your northern lights, McGee.
That must account for my good manners, Uppy. My grandfather wore the Southern uniform, you know.
Oh, really?
Sure. He was a conductor on the Chattanooga Choo Choo. You wanted to see me about?
Oh, I just wanted to tell you about the most marvelous fortune teller.
Fortune teller? Blah. Those bargain basement gypsies couldn't foretell the future of a blue-eyed blonde with the fleet in.
Oh. But they're fun, dearie. They're fun.
Ah, fun my clavicle. Dark man going across your path, going to take a long journey, going to get a letter. You'll find your diamond ring under the... Hey, maybe she can tell me where my $15 is. Come on, what are we waiting for? Get your hat, Molly. Where is this fortune teller,
Uppy? It's upstairs, Uppy.
Never mind, I'll find it. Come on, Molly. We'll see you later, Uppy. Why didn't I think of this before? Oh, boy, that $15 is as good as found. Right now. Why, those people are wonderful. I know of a case where a guy lost a bass drum once and those... Get a load of this reception room, Molly. Boy, what a dump.
Well, this was your idea, not mine.
Why do fortune tellers always live in joints like this? If they can see into the future, why don't they make a killing at the races and live in a classy apartment?
Well, maybe they can't get a crystal ball big enough to see a horse in.
Well, this one sure ought to know her onions. She's cooked enough of them around here.
Don't be so critical. You know, Madam X ought to be calling us in any time now. You know, we've been waiting here 25 minutes.
Madam X. Probably an old gypsy named McGillicuddy. Not that I care what her name is, if she can slap herself into a trance and find my $15.
You know, we'd have saved time if we just consulted Uncle Dennis.
Ah, what does he know about fortune telling?
Well, I don't know, but he certainly lives in an atmosphere of departed spirits. You know, last night I came into the hall and I found him balancing himself on the banister.
Yeah? What'd he say?
He said, niece, your escalator has run down.
At it again, huh? I gave him a lecture about that just the other day.
What'd he do?
He just sat tight. Oh.
Mr. McGee, I will see you now, please.
Oh, thank you, madam. Come on, dearie. We'll see what fate has in store for you. If fate still has a store, which I doubt with things being so hard to get.
Well, I'm ready, sis. Hop onto your broomstick.
This way, please.
Oh, incense.
I think I preferred the onions. Hey, can't we have a little light in here, sis?
No. The darkness, she is desirable for proper contact with the forces of the unknown. Sit down, please.
Oh, thank you. Wow. You see, the reason we came, Madam X, is because...
Do not tell me. I will tell you. Your husband is in trouble, no?
My husband is in trouble, yes.
Hey, how'd you know, sis? Can you read my mind?
Yes. It is very simple.
Huh? No, that's what he's been telling himself all day, madam.
How do we go about this now, sis? Do you read the stars, feel the bumps on my head, look at my palm, or do we just sit around and strain our eyes at each other?
No. For $5, I will answer 3 questions.
$5? Isn't that a little expensive?
Yes. Now you have 2 more questions.
That's some good stuff there. Fibber, McGee, and Molly, good Christmas show from 1942. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Thank you, David. All right, it is 11:35. We have some Christmas music here, Mike.
We sure do.
Like Christmas. I won't ruin it. I won't ruin it. I won't sing. Now, that sounds like, don't tell me. I know him. Gosh. That is,
It's easy, actually.
I know.
I'll give you a hint.
I'm having an old...
J.M.
J.M. I know this person. He's a great singer.
I gotta go to the John.
John. It's not John Mayer.
No. That's too current. Go
I know.
Back. Johnny, actually.
Johnny Mathis. Yes, good man.
Boy, you are slow tonight.
I know. I got your name wrong. I got Johnny Mathis's name wrong. I said Mike's name right, though, at least.
All right.
Well, good job. Good job, David. All right, well, that is Johnny Mathis. Ah, oh, he's a great singer. Yeah, terrific. Hey, you know what, Mike? Every single day, people are signing up to the Classic Radio Club. And I've been asking some of our members to please email me, tell me what you think of being a member of the Classic Radio Club. And we've been getting tons of emails from people. I really, really appreciate it, folks. If you're a member of the Classic Radio Club and you've emailed me, I really appreciate it. If you haven't yet, please do, because we would love to include your testimonial. We put a few of them up. I think there's about 10 of them up on the website. When you go to classicradioclub.com, you will read what people that are members are saying about the club. You know, Mike and I work on this for really hard. We take 10 classic radio shows every single month, and we put them out on CD, on five CDs in a beautiful collector case. And you can get them via digital as well, and that's less money. That's only $9.98 a month, $9.99 or something like $9.99 a month. You can have 10 shows digitally sent to you, and you'll also get a PDF of all my liner notes about those shows. But the quality of the programs are the best you'll ever hear, and they're the biggest and best shows. And if you want the CDs, it's all explained, the pricing, and there's an introductory month. You get it really inexpensively. I think $4.99. You get a five CD set with 10 shows in a collector case, $4.99. It's a $40 product. Yours for $4.99. So, and Mike, you're doing a great job. These Thank shows you. Sound amazing. And I really appreciate all the members, and we're signing people up every single day, and they are emailing and saying how much they like it, and we thought we'd post that at awesome. ClassicRadioClub.com. Check it all out. And if you're not a member, you should join, and you can cancel at any time. If you, for whatever reason, don't want to be a member, just cancel at any time, but we'd love you to join and experience what so many hundreds of people have that have joined the club.
This is Carl's last effort to make some friends here, so
yeah,
join the club.
I need friends. I'm very lonely.
All right, we're listening to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. This is a fun show from 1942, and here's the conclusion.
Well, we better not waste any time, Molly. Here's the question, sis. Where's the $15 I was saving for my wife's Christmas present?
It is right where you are putting it. Now, you have one more question.
Heavenly days, we're not making much progress, are we?
No. Now, for another $5, I will answer three more questions.
No, you don't, sis. Come on, Molly. I ain't going to pay her $10 to find 15. Here, sis, here's your $5.
Thank you. You must come again and see Madame X when you are troubled with business, law, or marriage.
Who, us? Do we look that silly? Do you think we like to be gypped?
That is three more questions. I will answer the first one by
come
saying...
Come on, Molly, come on.
Well, my goodness, McGee. We didn't get much satisfaction in there, did we?
Well, yes. She at least says that dough is still where I put it. That's some comfort. Well, come on, let's go home and see.
Well, hello there, folks. Say, have you been consulting Madame X?
Yes, if you call it that, Mr. Wilcox.
The way that dame clips you, she ought to be a barber in a boot camp. You going to consult her, Junior?
Sure. I was in here last week for advice.
About what?
Oh, business. I asked her how the future of Johnson's Wax stacked up. She said it had a very bright and sparkling future.
Oh.
She said that in times like these, when conservation was so important, more housewives than ever would preserve and protect their floors with Johnson's Wax.
And what was the second question, my fellow chump?
Well, then I asked her which of the Johnson Wax features I should emphasize, and she said health. Because Johnson's Wax seals the surface against dust and dirt and dampness and gives the housewife so much extra rest and leisure.
Oh, and the third question?
That's where I made my mistake. I asked her if my pipe bothered her.
And she said yes and soaked you another fin. Boy, what a racket.
Say, why on earth are you coming back, Mr. Wilcox, if you knew you'd been cheated?
I want to ask her if she took my watch.
Mr. Wilcox, I will see you now.
I'll say you will, baby. So long, folks.
What?
Well, let's get on home, McGee. We'll turn the house inside out when we find that $15.
And believe me, the next time I hide something, I'm going to hide it in plain sight. This'll teach me a lesson. If I wasn't such a sap-headed, beetle-brained, lock-eared, low-browed, rhythm-gone... Luckiest tricks I ever heard of any.
Well, now that we're home, where'd we better start, McGee?
Oh, I don't know. I remember putting it in a place where I could lay hands on it at a minute's notice.
You say the $15 was in a white envelope?
Yes.
Well, that shouldn't be so hard to find. Would you put it behind one of the pictures?
No, I looked behind all the pictures this morning. I turned Whistler's mother around so many times she almost fell out of her chair.
Say, maybe you put it under a rug. No, I've had them up too many times. I'd have seen it.
Oh, why can't I remember? I must have a skull full of rice pudding. I'm the biggest drip this side of Niagara Falls. The only thing that keeps my ears apart is my big fat mouth.
Oh. No, no, McGee. Anybody can forget things.
Nobody can forget them as easy as me. It's exasperating. I'm getting so I'm afraid to shake hands for fear I'll walk off without my arm. Here, I thought I was a pretty bright guy, and I couldn't pass the intelligence test of a Mongolian basket weaver.
Oh,
why of all
now,
the
dirty for goodness sakes, if you'd stop scolding yourself for a few minutes, maybe we could get something done.
Well, my gosh, well...
Now, listen, here's what we better do. I'll start with the upstairs and go through every room, and you look around down here, and between us, we ought to cover every inch of this house.
Okay, but I...
Now, stop your arguing. Anyway, you're not as dumb as you claim. You're really pretty smart.
I am?
Yes. Oh. Or you wouldn't have hidden that $15 from yourself. When it comes to money, and I hope we do...
Come in.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Oldtimer.
Hello, daughter. Hello, Johnny. I just stopped in to say goodbye. Goodbye. Hey, Oldtimer, come back here. What's the matter, kid?
You can't yell goodbye at us and then rush away like that. Where are you going and for how long?
Yeah, and when will you be back and for how long?
Going to Chicago, kids. Gonna be gone for an indefinite period.
Oh, what do you mean, indefinite period?
I mean, I won't be back till the afternoon of January 5th. But whether 3 o'clock or 3:15 is indefinite.
Fly?
Hey!
Fly!
Oh, well, I'll hold still and you swat him, right?
No, my husband means, are you going to fly to Chicago or take the train?
Ain't decided, daughter. Thought maybe I'd get up early in the morning, throw the saddle on old Betsy, keep on her back and ride her all the way to Shy.
Well, that's a long trip for a horse.
Who's a horse?
Why, isn't Betsy?
No, Betsy's my bicycle. On the other hand, kids, I'll likely take the steam cars. I love trains. Used to be a railroad man in my younger days.
What'd you do on the railroad?
What do you mean, what did I do, Johnny? I had my own.
You mean you owned a railroad?
Sure did, daughter. 18 cars, 2 engines, and 72 foot of track. Run from the dining room through the front hall, back to the kitchen, around into the dining room again. Stopped at the umbrella stand, the piano stool, the refrigerator, and the cook, exception Mondays, which was the cook's day off, at the piano stool on signal only. But I had a bad wreck in 1889 when Papa come home late one night, tripped over the coal car.
Oh, tough luck.
Yes. Now I never see an engine with a tender behind without thinking of what Papa did to me that night. Now, come on, kids, Merry Christmas.
The Kingsmen sing, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas.
May all your Christmases be
live through. Every wish you make for Christmas.
Confess, I'm about ready to give up. You certainly hit that $15 well.
Yes, and I could kick myself around the block for it, too. If I'm not the silliest...
Yes, we've been all over that. Are you sure you had $15 in the first place?
Sure, I'm sure. A 10 and a 5. And they were earmarked for your Christmas present, too.
They were what?
Earmarked. That's what the government does with money, so that's what I do.
How?
Well, I put ink all over my ears and pressed both bills against them. I think the theory is that no two people have ears alike. You know, like fingerprints, only easier to see.
Well, that must keep Mr. Morgenthau pretty busy.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Now, listen, let's just sit down here and reconstruct what you did when you hid the money. What did you do first?
Well, first I got me an envelope.
Come in.
Whose car is that out in front?
The black one? Well, that's a kind of a combination ownership, bud. Me and the finance company.
I see you have an ace sticker on the windshield. You do any pleasure driving?
Take him for a ride around the block, McGee. That'll answer that question. In that car, sir, you get more pleasure walking.
And I don't quite understand...
Let me see your draft registration card, please.
Okay, here you are, bud. I'm not only a little overage, but I got a lot of collateral dependents. I got collateral at the First National, the Morris Plan, the building in London.
Never mind. How much coffee have you got?
Oh, well, about a half a pound.
Sugar?
No, thanks, just cream.
Now, look here, bud. I don't mind answering questions.
McGee, this is war.
Yes. Sure. We read about it in the papers, but what...
I only have a few more questions, then I'm through. Have you been buying war bonds?
Bud, we've been buying war bonds till we're red, white, and blue in the face. And I've licked the back of so many war-saving stamps, everything I eat tastes like glue. Now, if you don't mind...
I hope you're not complaining.
Certainly we complain. Everybody complains, and it doesn't mean a thing. And now, if you'll please explain
why... McGee, I see you have cuffs on those trousers. Did you buy that suit after restrictions were put on clothing?
No, I didn't. And while I don't like to be personal, bud, there are still a few people who need a cuff on the pants. So will you please tell us just who you...
Just one more thing. The government doesn't want you to buy anything you don't need. They're trying to keep prices at a reasonable level, encourage buying bonds and paying off debts. We want this country to be on a sound financial footing after this war is over. Now remember that.
Just what is your connection with the government?
Oh, my goodness, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Mr. Tolliver. I just moved into the brick house down the street.
Oh, I'm glad to know you, Tolliver. This is my wife, Molly.
How do you do, I'm sure. Just what department of the government are you in, Mr. Tolliver?
Oh, I'm not in the government, Mrs. McGee. I run the hamburger wagon down there at 14th and Oak. And I must say we serve the finest...
Well, damn granted, what right do you got to come busting in here asking all that silly questions?
Well, I think when a man moves into a new neighborhood, he naturally wants to know all about his neighbors. Certainly is nice to have met you folks. Good night.
Nervy people I ever
met. Tells me I'm going to have trouble with that mug. He's going to get in my hair, and there ain't enough room in it for anybody but me. A self-appointed cop.
Oh, never mind, McGee. Let's concentrate on finding your $15. Now, what did you do after you got the envelope?
Well, now, let me think. I put the money in the envelope and sealed it.
Yes?
Then I started looking for a hiding place.
Yes?
First, I thought I'd hide it in the hall closet. And then I says to myself, no, I says, I'm going to clean out that closet one of these days. So I takes the envelope.
Oh, for goodness sakes, come in.
Hello, Mrs. McGee.
Hello, Mr. McGee.
Oh, Mr. Wimp.
Hi, Wimp, old man. Why the suitcase? You running away from home again?
Oh, no, Mr. McGee. I'm going to Chicago on a business trip for about 3 weeks.
Oh, is your wife going with you, Mr. Wimple?
No, she isn't, Mrs. McGee. I'm going to be terribly lonesome without her, too. Ouch.
What's the matter?
I was crossing my fingers so hard I almost broke them.
Well, what kind of a business trip is this, Mr. Wimple?
I'm going to see my publishers, Mrs. McGee. The ones who publish all my poetry.
Oh.
They sent me a telegram saying they wanted to see me.
Gee, they must think a lot of you, Wimp.
Yes. They wanted to publish my picture. And I sent them some and they wired right back. We don't believe it. Come in person. Wasn't that nice?
So you won't be here for Christmas, Mr. Wimple?
No, but Sweetie Face gave me my Christmas present before I left. Look, a check for $25.
Say, that's great, Wimp.
Isn't it, though? Mm. She says if I'm a good boy all year, that next Christmas she'll sign it.
She might even throw in the bladder.
Why, that old saber tooth. I thought of a swell gift I'd like to send her, Wimp, but I hate to ask anybody to deliver it.
Oh, I'd be very happy to take it over, Mr. McGee.
Oh, no, you wouldn't. It might explode before you got there.
Not if you timed it right to the second.
Give your wife for Christmas, Mr. Wimple.
A great big bottle of cologne, Mrs. McGee, to be opened on Christmas morning.
Cologne, eh? What kind, Wimp?
I mixed it up myself, Mr. McGee. Mostly carbolic acid.
Oh! Why, Mr. Wimple, that's liable to take the skin right off her face.
Yeah. Yes.
Three weeks away from that gunner's mate of his, and Wimp will be a new man.
Poor little fella.
I'll be a poor little fella myself if I don't find that $15. If I wasn't such a numbskull, such a hopeless dope and a blue ribbon...
Oh, stop it now. Huh? Let's take up where we left off. Okay. After you decided against hiding it in the closet, what'd you do?
Doggone it, that's what I can't remember. All I know is I put it someplace where I'd remember it just before Christmas.
Well, I'm sorry, McGee. I can't imagine where in the Dickens you...
Dickens! That's it. Now I remember. Here it is, right here in this book.
What book?
Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Whatever made you hide your money in that?
Safest place in the world. Nobody ever opens that book till Christmas time.
Winter weather is hard on our floors, we might as well admit it. When snow and slush and wet get tracked in, the floor surfaces need the protection of a tough coat of Johnson's Wax. If you examine the waxed floor under a magnifying glass, you'd see that it's the wax that gets all the wear. The surface underneath is safe. And don't forget that with genuine Johnson's Wax, you can touch up heavy traffic spots whenever necessary without having to re-wax the entire floor. Don't forget either that there are 100 extra labor-saving uses for wax around your home. Windowsills, Venetian blinds, luggage, shoes and boots, furniture and woodwork. In these times when we have to take better care of the things we have, wax is a helpful ally.
That was a kind of a clever stunt at that, hiding this $15 in Dickens' Christmas Carol. Maybe I ain't such a fool after all.
No, you really have some bright moments, McGee.
Yeah, I guess I do at that. Well, all's well that ends well. Here, you keep the $15 for me. I gotta throw this envelope in the wastebasket.
Well, this isn't $15. This is the envelope.
Huh? Oh, my gosh. I tore up the money.
What?
Oh, if I ain't the worst muddle-headed, more than ever should have had $15 in the first place. I'm the dumbest, dilliest, dim-wittedest dumb... Ah, good night.
Good night, all.
The characters of the old-timer and Wallace Wimple heard on our program were played by Bill Thompson. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson Wax Finishes for the home and industry, inviting you all to join us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Fibber, McGee, and Molly, December 15th, 1942. Starring Jim and Marion Jordan, sponsored by Johnson's Wax, is heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know what? Woodman's is a new sponsor of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm very excited about it. They have amazing stores, super low prices every single day, and we have a very special promotion to talk about that starts January 1, Mike.
We do.
Yeah, and I know you just learned about this today. Mike's pretty excited about it because now you have to shop Woodman's, and I'll tell you why. Because when you go into Woodman's and you do your grocery shopping there, you can take a photo of your receipt with your smartphone and email it to us. We do not have the email set up yet. Just give me till next week. We'll tell you what it is. You'll be able to send that in to us, and we'll then send you an email back with 12 classic radio shows. And those 12 classic radio shows change every single month. So you shop at Woodman's, take a photo of your receipt, you'll email it in to me, and then we'll pop you back an email with 12 classic radio shows as a thank you for shopping at Woodman's.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, we're getting it all set up. Starts January 1st. We'll give you all the information next week on our show. We'll tell you exactly how to do it. Make sure you shop at Woodman's. Great stores and terrific pricing as well. All right, in our next hour, it's the CBS Radio Workshop from 1956 with a great show called All Is Bright. Good Christmas program. After that, it's Escape from 1952, a show called The Man Who Liked Dickens.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David Jennings. It is 12:06. To my right, we have Mike Costella, who is pinch hitting for Lisa Wolf, who is in Florida enjoying the warm weather.
Yep.
But, you know, it's not that cold out. I mean, we've had a mild winter.
We sure have.
If this is how it was through March or April, I'd be a happy camper.
I agree.
It's not going to happen, though. I mean,
we'll see what happens.
No way. We're going to. We only had really one bad snowstorm so far. I shouldn't probably talk about it because I'm probably jinxing it, right?
I don't know. The Almanac said that we're supposed to not really get that cold this winter.
Oh, man, that'd be nice. I hate the cold weather.
Yeah,
I don't like it at all. So, yeah, Lisa, she's not listening. She says, texted me. She said, I have a good show. I can't listen. I was up at 3 o'clock in the morning to catch a flight. So she'll listen to the podcast. And, you know, speaking of podcasts, you know, a lot of our listeners are like, man, you're on late. And we are. We start at 11 p.m. We're on until 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays till 1 o'clock on Sundays. We have a podcast for this show, and there's several ways you can listen to our podcast if you miss the program. The way I do it is not the way Mike does it.
Nope.
I just Google it. I just go to Google and I type in WGN Radio Theater Podcast and it pops up. But there's an easier way, right?
Yeah, you can just go to WGNradio.com.
Yeah.
You can hit the schedule and there's a few other links in there too to get to the page of podcasts.
Yeah. And then we have a Facebook page too.
We do.
Right? WGN. You just search WGN Radio Theater on
Correct.
Facebook.
Yep.
We have a nice Facebook page up there, and please do like us. In this hour, the CBS Radio Workshop from 1956, a program called All Is Bright. That is coming your way in just a moment. But right now, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous? And it's all about Jane Seymour. Would you like to play the game, folks? What do you win, Mike?
You are going to win a Never Measure.
Oh, yeah, man, the coveted Never Measure.
Yes.
I want one of those.
Lisa has one, I think.
I know. She constantly reminds me of that. All right, the number to call is 312-981-7200. Play the game live on the air with us, 312-981-7200. And what caller would you like?
We'll take number 4.
Number 4 again. Call us right now. We'll play the game. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
All right. Jane Seymour is the actress we're going to be talking about. And we have Velma on the line. Hi, Velma. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Terrific. Good to talk to you. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank
Hi,
you
Velma.
So much. All right, so are you ready for this? You're going to win a Never Measure. Yeah, well, you know, you're a winner no matter what, so let's just have some fun. You ready? Here's the first one. Jane's mother was in a Japanese concentration camp during World War II for more than 3 years. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
I'll say it's real.
Mike, what do you think?
Wow, so strange.
I know.
I'm going to go with real.
You're both going with real?
Yes.
Wow. You got it right. Very good. You're on a roll, Velma. All right, here's the second one. Her twin sons, Johnny and Christopher, are named after her friends, Johnny Depp and Christopher Plummer. Is that real or is that ridiculous? What do you think, Velma?
Ooh. Jane Seymour, her twin sons. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
They're named Johnny
I'll
and Christopher.
Ridiculous.
You're going to say ridiculous.
I'm going to say ridiculous as well.
You're both saying ridiculous? Well, guess what?
Wow.
Here's the real answer. They are named after her friends Johnny Cash and Christopher Reeve.
Huh, interesting.
I think of that. Hey, you're 2 for 2, Velma.
All right.
All right, here's the third one. Let's see if you can get 3 for 3. Born Joyce Frankenberg, she took her name Jane Seymour after King Henry VIII's third wife. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
Ooh. I'd say real.
So you're going to say real on that. What do you think, Mike?
I don't know. I'm going to say ridiculous, actually.
Well, Velma is...
Wow.
And all Mike right. is... Velma, you got 3 for 3. That's
good
kicking,
job.
That's kicking some butt right there.
I think it's interesting that she's going to pick a name of a third wife of a king. That's,
I know. Well, you know what? Velma, great job.
Way hey, Velma, go. you got a number measure. Easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast and eliminate the need to use the measuring tape or calculate fractions. Veteran-owned and made in the USA. You can check out nevermeasure.com.
All right, Velma, there
Good
you
job.
Go. Enjoy that. And
Thank
Merry
you
Christmas.
So much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Merry Christmas to you.
Can I ask,
yes.
Mariska Hargitay, her daughter?
No.
Am I wrong?
Jane Seymour's daughter? Is
yeah.
that, no, she is not. She
oh,
is not.
I got the wrong one.
You know,
okay,
she you know, I'll tell you
one.
Who her daughter is. Her daughter is Jane Mansfield. She's the
yeah,
daughter of
okay.
Jane Mansfield. Yeah, that I'm certain of. All right?
Okay.
I'm not certain of a lot of stuff, but I'm certain of that.
But you've only been wrong once since...
1974.
What? Right.
Yeah, there you go. Enjoy the rest of the show. Take care, Velma. All right, so it is time now for the CBS Radio Workshop. This was an anthology drama, came to radio in 1956, lasted just one season. It was billed as radio's distinguished series to man's imagination, and it was a revival of the earlier Columbia Workshop, and in fact, it used some of the same writers and directors. These were dramatizations of works by the great writers like Robert A. Heinlein, Sinclair Lewis, Edgar Allan Poe, Frederick Pohl, James Thurber, and many others, and it often used the voices of William Conrad, Elliot Lewis, Paul Frees, Hans Conried, other great L.A. actors. And we have a terrific episode, a good Christmas show for you now, going back to December 23rd, 1956. This is called All Is Bright. It stars Rudolf Weiss, Joseph Julian, and Herm Dinkin. Here's part one now of the CBS Radio Workshop.
The purser said we'd meet her about 11.
I have to see her.
Those lights.
Impressive, isn't it? Like a phosphorescent water box.
Oh, much prettier. I suppose they are having a ball, too. Oh, isn't it thrilling? Christmas Eve, in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And, oh, Jeannie.
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Today, All Is Bright, a simple story of a simple song, which from long lost beginnings, through the help of a persistent king and a melodious bird trained by a truant schoolboy, developed into the world's most beloved expression of the spirit of Christmas, the feast of men and women of goodwill, and especially of children.
Takes me back, that.
Huh? I mean, I beg your pardon.
I said it takes me back, that waltz. Quite a way, I'm afraid.
Oh, yes. Yes, still, you're not playing it right.
Oh? In what way?
Not enough spirit. Not as the Viennese thought of it.
Oh.
They're playing it an English waltz, I suppose.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chenault, it's Christmas Eve. So, on the eve of this, our greatest of holidays, we will play a melody which I am sure you all know. Play, boys.
I'm sorry, Mr. Conductor. I did not mean to be heard.
Well, sir, I don't see why... Oh, my maestro. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry I didn't recognize the voice immediately. Allow me to introduce, ladies and gentlemen, the noted, the famous conductor of some of the greatest orchestras in the world. Maestro Reinhard Kramer.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, the maestro is Austrian, I know, by birth, that is. And since this worldwide favorite of all Christmas carols was written in Austria, I can't think of anything more fitting that the maestro himself should take over the baton. What do you say, ladies and gentlemen?
Go on, old boy.
It will be an honor, sir, something all of us will remember.
Well, if you insist, so... Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. There's a guitar in your band, Mr.
Woodson, sir.
Here, maestro.
Thank you. Yes, I will have to ask your indulgence, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Woodson. But this song, you see, has meant a great deal to me ever since I was a child, so long ago. That was in a place called Hallein in Austria, near Salzburg. The composer of this melody, Franz Gruber was his name, still lived there when I was a boy. And I went to school with his grandson, Felix. He later became a conductor in Vienna. Well, he also is now dead. It is really a very simple song. It was first written for just one guitar and two voices. Clear, young voices. And the melody was somewhat different from the one we play today. It is only a peasant song, after all. A song without pretension. What feeling it has came from the hearts of two simple men, two friends, imbued with devotion to their fellow beings, a love of life, humility in the face of its mysteries, and a deep sense of reverence.
I say, old boy, why not tell us the whole story?
My reliable British friend, of course. Well, this was in... Now, let me see. Yes, in 1818, just a short while after the Napoleonic Wars. There were two men who met several times a week in a small village near Salzburg called Oberndorf. The local priest, Father Joseph Moore, and the school teacher. The two used to sing and play the guitar together, and the school teacher always helped the priest out on Sundays by playing the organ in the village church. Christmas, of course, was the most festive season of the year. And no one for miles around ever missed the Christmas Eve midnight mass in Oberndorf. But on the day before Christmas, 1818, there was an unexpected disaster.
Father! Oh, globes are Jesus Christus.
Ewigkeit, amen. What is the matter, Franz?
The organ, Father. I had called the children in for practice, but the organ won't play. I can't get a sound out of it.
You're sure?
Of course I am sure.
There's a midnight mass.
It couldn't have happened at a worse time.
The organ man is not due until February or March.
But what will we do for music at the mass? We can't disappoint all those people.
I will have to think, Franz. Please, go back to the church now. I will be with you soon.
It's no use.
Franz.
Yes, Father. I can't make it work.
It is all right, Franz. I have had an idea. Here is a little poem I have written. You think you could put this to music?
Stille Nacht, heilige Nacht. But we have no organ, Father.
Well, we still have our guitar.
Ah, You mean we'll use the guitar?
The guitar and two voices, perhaps. That may be all we can count on. You and me.
Ah, yes. Let me see. Alles schläft, eins im Wacht. We don't have to do the singing, Father. There are two girls in the choir with the sweetest voices we have ever had.
And within a day, Franz Gruber had indeed set Father Moore's little poem to a simple yet beautiful melody. This is what the people of Oberndorf and the nearby mountain farms heard that Christmas. A melody so touching and so easily grasped that all the other children in the church quickly joined in. That is how Silent Night was born. But there's more to it. First of all, there are the mice.
The mice?
Yes, the mice. And then there's a bird in the story, too. Well, the mouse part is simple. When the snows began to melt in the valley of the Salzach, where Oberndorf lies, the organ man, as Father Moore called him, arrived in the village. The organ building and repairing were highly specialized trades in those days. And many of the men skilled in them came from villages along the Ziller River in the Austrian Tyrol.
Well, Mr. Mauracher, nothing serious, I hope.
Nothing serious, Father. It's just that you don't seem to feed your mice very well. They ate out a whole section of the bellows the size of a silver thaler and then built a nest inside. I cleaned out the mice and put a patch on the hole. You want to try it out?
Oh, Mr. Gruber here plays the organ for me. Franz.
Of course, Father. I'll try our new Christmas carol.
Round yon dearest high holy pair, and their infant with curly hair.
Say, that's a nice song. I never heard it before. That's great. Mind if I take it with me?
I'll write it out for you.
Nah, I couldn't read it. Me, I carry them up here in my hat.
Well, Mauracher, the organ man, did carry the new song in his head. And when he returned to his native Ziller Valley, he taught it to all the children there. Later, the young Strassers, two brothers and their two sisters, became especially fond of the song from heaven, as they called it. And they worked out a four-part singing arrangement for the two-voice melody.
Stille Nacht, heilige Nacht, alles schläft.
Old Mr. Strasser was a glove maker. And when his children were old enough, he sent them each year to the many big trade fairs of Europe to sell his output. But the children often felt lonely, of course, and homesick. And they used to relieve their feelings by singing all the songs that reminded them of home. And so, one day in Leipzig, the capital of the Kingdom of Saxony, a dignified elderly gentleman approached them.
Don't be alarmed, children. My name is Politz. I am the Director General of Music of this Kingdom of Saxony.
Yes, sir.
I like your singing, especially that last one you sang.
The song from heaven.
What was that?
The song from heaven. We call it that. The people in our valley.
Oh, and where might that be?
In Tyrol. We are Austrians.
Oh, a Tyrolean folk song. Well, children, I want to ask whether you would be interested in singing for me at a concert.
All right, that's the first portion of the CBS Radio Workshop with All Is Bright from December 23rd, 1956. More in just a few moments.
Rockin' around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party hop. Mistletoe hung where you can.
Roger, by the way, I'm a large, unless it's Donna Karen. Then I'm an extra large.
Really? I didn't know there was a difference between the labels.
Yep.
Oh, I did not know.
Donna Karen runs small, so I would need Burberry also. I would need an extra large. Anything Burberry?
In Burberry?
Yeah. Okay. So everything else, you know, at Neiman Marcus, everything sure. else, if you want to shop for me.
Well,
when there.
I go shopping, you know, I always take a pair of scissors with me because I cut the little labels out, and those are the ones I give to you.
Yeah.
And look, I got you a Donna Karen.
That.
I got you a Burberry.
That.
It and doesn't look like you're writing the information down, though, Roger.
Oh, it's all locked away right up.
And you know, it's great.
Ouch.
With that little label, it's can wrap it so easily. You know,
I know.
You could take actually from like a chocolate kiss. You could use that
exactly. The
just wrap
thing,
it right
yeah.
in there.
Well, you know what I really do? I use double stick tape.
Yeah,
and I put it so I make like a reversible label for you. It depends on the crowd you're in.
Yeah,
so I'll put two different labels back to back from different stores. So if you're really with the really ritzy Ritz hoity toity,
right?
I give you the real expensive stuff.
And
then if you're coming down
that,
to like just
Roger.
The neighbor kids, I give you like you know Kmart, Sears, that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, well I'll take that too. So are you? So are you enjoying your CDs?
You know
that I got.
There are so many.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, you're loving it?
You got me a box of about 10,000 shows.
So I gave Roger my newest CD collection. It's 100
mm-hmm.
of the greatest classic radio shows of all time on 50 CDs. And you know what, Roger?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be six more of those volumes.
Oh, my God.
They're in the works. Mike just doesn't have enough arms. If he was an octopus... We'd have them already, but folks, if you want to see what Roger got for Christmas from me, just go to a website called 100radioshows.com, 100radioshows.com,
the
number 100, and then radioshows.com, and we have a box set. It has 50 CDs. 100 shows, mm-hmm. all digitally remastered. It's a really fun collection.
And I'll tell you, you didn't realize this, but I found this out after I got home.
Yeah.
This serves a double purpose.
Why?
You gave me two gifts in one.
Why?
Well, you know, it's a pretty heavy box.
It is.
There's a lot in there.
You can use it as a paperweight.
No. I'll take a CD out, I'll put it in, and while I'm sitting there, I do arm raises with the rest of the box. I'm working my abs or whatever you call them.
It's not your abs. It would be your biceps
abs.
Or your triceps.
Where I'm putting the food. Okay, the triceps. I'm working the triceps.
I love that.
Wow.
You
should really get Carl something really good.
You know, that's a great
I'll get him another box that he can use.
Multitasking. I'm glad you love it. And you know, Roger's a big fan of classic radio.
You know.
He used to buy albums and records and cassettes from me.
From the store.
Yeah.
I bought cassettes.
Right.
Of old time radio shows.
Might have been, was it Metro Golden Memories, Chuck Shaden's store?
No. I got them from Borders and Barnes & Noble.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Which not necessarily long ago, and then they took them off the shelves for a while, and I got very upset.
Yeah,
and then they came back, and then you started doing CDs,
mm-hmm.
and so I love getting into those. But I had so many of those that I just loved listening to.
Well, these are all the shows that I gave Roger, all 100 shows on 50 CDs. Digitally remastered. They sound amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Mike did a tremendous job. And we have six more collections. One is an all Christmas show, all Christmas collection. That won't be ready this year. That'll be ready like by first quarter of next year. It'll be ready. Then we have an all comedy, an all detective, an all mystery, an all western, and an all drama.
man.
So you, I have you. So I have birthday for you, Christmas, Valentine's Day.
Now you know why I don't sleep.
Day. I know. You know what the problem is going to be, though? By the end of the year, I'll have them all. I could start my own business.
Well, I can tell you this. As they come out, you're getting them for whatever.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
Because I know you love these shows.
I do.
So, folks, go to 100radioshows.com. Check it out. And, you'll really enjoy it. And it's going to take you a while to listen to all those shows, Roger.
Well, I know. It's kind of I'll binge listen as opposed to binge watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll binge listen. Don't worry about it.
There's some great shows in there. I appreciate it. I'm glad you like it.
Thank you again.
All right. We're listening to the CBS Radio Workshop with All Is Bright. Let's tune in to the conclusion.
This was only 15 years after Franz Gruber and Father Moore had written their little hymn of devotion. But Mauracher, the organ builder, had never troubled to ask who had written the song. And so when the Oberndorf Carol had a great success in Leipzig and then swept through Europe, it was as an orphan. Another 20 years later, King Frederick Wilhelm IV of Prussia heard the melody during Christmas Eve services in the Berlin Cathedral. He called for the royal concertmaster.
Your Majesty.
Herr Eck, you are the concertmaster of the Kingdom of Prussia. What is the origin of that hymn, that lovely melody that was played tonight during our services?
I'm sorry to say that I do not know, Your Majesty. The melody, if I might say so, suggests an Austrian origin. Haydn, perhaps.
Well, then it's off to Austria you go. I want to know who wrote that song, and I don't want to see you again until you found out.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Well, the Prussians are a determined people. And the Royal Prussian Concertmaster soon was on his way to Austria. To Vienna first, of course. It was then the musical capital of the world.
Most honored, sir. I have been music librarian here at the Imperial Archives for many years, and I can assure you I've never heard nor read that melody. And I can further add that Joseph Haydn did not compose it, nor did a great Mozart. Of course, it is just possible that Joseph Haydn's brother Michael wrote it. And now that I come to think of it, there are certain similarities of phrasing.
Yes, but where can I find out for certain?
Well, most of Michael's works have been lost, unfortunately. However, he was organ master at St. Peter's Abbey in Salzburg for a good many years. You might inquire there.
On went the Prussian concertmaster, Ludwig Eck. But in the length and breadth of Austria, he could find no trace of the song, or of anyone who might have composed it. The Berlin concert season was coming up, and so one day, concertmaster Ludwig Eck, miserable over his failure, reluctantly took a coach back to Berlin. He stopped at the inn in Bavaria on his first night after leaving Austria and composed a letter to the publishers of the official Prussian hymn book.
And would therefore suggest, in the next edition of your hymnal, you list Silent Night, Holy Night, as probably by Michael Haydn, brother of the celebrated Joseph. Yeah, that ought to do it.
By next morning, though, Ludwig Eck had recovered sufficiently from his disappointments to stop by in the dining room of the inn for a hearty breakfast.
Now then, after the soup, a few eggs, perhaps, and some of that wonderful bacon of yours. And then, yes, a half chicken. And a stein of beer, of course. That bird!
Sir? That bird, my song. He has my song.
Oh, I am sorry, sir, but I am not responsible. He was singing when I got him.
Yes, yes, man, yes. But where did you get him?
A traveler left him here, sir.
Now, never mind that. Where did he get him?
A man came from Salzburg, sir. He did say that he had bought the bird from someone at St. Peter's?
St. Peter's in Salzburg. So it was Michael Haydn after all. Tell my coachman we are not going on to Berlin. We are going back to Salzburg, St. Peter's Abbey.
Glaub sei Jesus Christus. Yes?
The abbot. I am emissary of His Majesty, the King of Prussia. Now, please tell your abbot that I must see him.
Ludwig Eck was cordially received by the abbot and invited to stay and examine Michael Haydn's remaining manuscripts. He pored over yellowing scores for a week and found nothing. And so, Ludwig Eck went home to Berlin. There was one person, though, who had overheard the concertmaster's story of the singing finch. Ambrosius Prensteiner, who had himself studied at the Abbey School and was now choir inspector of the Salzburg district. He had developed an idea.
Let's see now, the first two windows, that would be the fifth class. No, probably not that old. The next two, the fourth. I don't think so, but let's try it anyway. I hope I can still whistle. No, that's no good. Well, let's try the third class.
Hey, Felix, your bird is back. That singing bullfinch you taught that Christmas song to when you sold that barbarian.
No.
Yeah, well, listen for yourself. It couldn't be any other bird who knew that melody.
But how could he have come back?
Well, don't ask me. Let's look at it.
Sir?
What's your name, boy?
Felix Gruber, sir.
And you have been capturing birds and teaching them to sing and then selling them?
Well, only a few times, sir.
Oh, never mind now. I myself tried to earn a few groschen that way when I studied in that same room. Not that that is any excuse.
No, sir.
I have something more important now. Did you ever teach one of your birds a song that goes like this?
Yes, sir.
Well, where did you learn that melody?
From my father, sir. He's a musician. He made it up.
He made it up?
Yes, sir. At home, we always sing it at Christmas.
And where is home, may I ask?
In Hallein, sir. My father is choir master.
Come on, boy, jump down from the window. I'll catch you. We're going to Hallein. You boys, you may tell the master that Felix Gruber has been excused for the rest of the day.
Down the street, sir. That White House.
I hope your father is at home.
Oh, he's always home, except Fridays and Sundays.
So you did write that song.
Only the melody, Inspector. My friend, my very great friend, Father Moore, wrote the words. He died about 6 years ago in Wagram.
Do you still have your original manuscript?
Original? I don't know. It was so long ago, and the song was such a little thing. I would have to ask my wife. Marie?
Oh, never mind now. You will find it later. But that little song of yours has gone a long way in the world. There was a man down here all the way from Berlin to find out about it.
About that song?
Yes, about that song.
Here is a copy of a book he left with me. It was published in Leipzig, and it has your melody. But here is what you had better do now that fame is catching up with you.
Well, that's almost the end of my story, ladies and gentlemen. Except that the letter went off shortly from Hallein to the Royal Concertmaster of Prussia, Ludwig Eck.
Authentic history of the composition of the Christmas song, Stille Nacht. And since this song subsequently appeared in a collection in Leipzig, in a somewhat changed form, the author begs to submit a copy of the original music, hoping that my essay will suffice. I am, with veneration, with high esteem, your most obedient servant.
Franz Gruber died 10 years later, as poor as he had been born. And now, ladies and gentlemen, there seems to be only one thing left for me to do, and the only thing I was asked to do in the first place, and that is to play the song from heaven, as those Tyrolean children called it, as I feel it should be played. I hope that the orchestra, perhaps some of you, will join me.
Been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop and All is Bright, the story of Silent Night, written by Henry E. Fritsch, with the original music of Franz Gruber and additional music composed and conducted by Alexander Steinert. Rudolf Weiss was heard as Kramer, Joe Julian as Father Moore, and Herm Dinkin as Gruber. This is Bob Pfeiffer inviting you to listen to the CBS Radio Workshop each Sunday at this same time. Stay tuned for Suspense, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
That's the CBS Radio Workshop. Very interesting series. They did something kind of unusual every single week on this series. And on this particular show, a Christmas show, it was the story of how Silent Night came to be written and become world famous. A good cast, Rudolf Weiss, Joseph Julian, Herm Dinkin, and a December 23rd, 1956 broadcast. It was sustained. This series did not have a sponsor. It was sustained by the network as heard on CBS Radio. Hope you enjoyed that. In just a few minutes, Mike Estella and I will be back with more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Mike, we have a few more minutes till the news. I want to remind all of our listeners to send in a picture of your kitty cat along with your name, your kitty cat's name, and your city and state, and email that to us here at catspridephoto kittylitter@gmail.com. And why should they do that, Mark?
Because you can get a free year of kitty litter.
Wow. That's a nice prize. And that's courtesy of our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater, Cats Pride. And they do this every single month. Dan Jaffe and Dave Weiske come in here, and they just pick a random winner. And that random winner could be you. Believe me, every single person that has won has probably thought, oh, I'm never going to win this.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
But someone does every single month. And this has been going on for over 4 years. So what is that?
That long already?
It's 12 times 4. That's 48.
That's too big of a number for you.
48. How's that, huh? Smarty
all
pants.
All right, you got me.
Huh, smarty pants?
Yeah, all right.
So, 48 winners.
Yeah.
Got a year's supply. That's very generous.
And you know what? If you don't want the year's supply, I'll take it.
Yeah, Mike can use it. He can use it.
I'm not eligible, so.
Yeah,
no, he's not.
Mike's got a cat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has two dogs
and two dogs.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Man. And the cat's feeling a little left out right now, so I think maybe you need to do something for that cat.
We'll see.
But our listeners could win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. And I'll tell you what, folks, do support Cat's Pride. They're a great company. They're our main sponsor. They've been with us from day one. And Dan Jaffe is a huge, huge classic radio fan. Huge. You think Roger's a classic radio fan?
Nah.
Dan Jaffe, Roger, listens to classic radio to and from work every single day.
Oh, my God.
He just loves classic radio shows.
That's fantastic.
We appreciate that because his company is our main sponsor. They are one of the main reasons why we are broadcasting this show for 4 years straight, and they do a terrific job with their product, and they're real humanitarians.
Yeah, they're saving
cats' lives.
They're donating pounds and pounds of cat litter to
millions,
all of these societies.
Literally millions of pounds. So they're in the green jug, Cat's Pride. If you haven't switched over to them yet, please do. And make sure you get your picture of your kitty cat into us, and we'll enter you because you can win again next month. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, we draw a name every month.
Every single month. All right, so coming up in our next hour, we have a half-hour episode of Escape from 1952. December 21st of 1952, a show called The Man Who Liked Dickens. It's a mystery, and it's a good Christmas show on Escape. That's our next hour.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
Well, no, Lisa Wolfe is not here,
nope.
Bill Curtis. but Mike Costella is pinch hitting for Lisa.
Yep.
Lisa's in Florida. She's enjoying the warm weather. Thanks for the news, Roger Badish. And in this hour, it is Escape with the Man Who Liked Dickens from 1952. But first, we're going to play our game. Cat's Pride, is it real or is it ridiculous? And what do they win?
They are going to win some Twilight Zone radio dramas.
Yeah, 4 CDs of the Twilight Zone that can be yours by playing the game with us. And the subject of our game is Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell.
All right.
And what caller would you like?
We'll stick with number 4.
Caller 4. Call us now, 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. Call us right now. Play the game live on the air. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
All right, let's get ridiculous with Claudia. Hi, Claudia.
Hey, Claudia.
Hi. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. I won't sing you a Christmas song because I want you to enjoy your experience on the air with us here. all right. So our subject is Will Ferrell. Are you ready to play the game?
I'm ready.
All right. Our contestants have been doing pretty well tonight.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's try the first one here. Will Ferrell turned down $16 million to star in Anchorman 3. Is that real or is that ridiculous?
That's a hard one. I guess I'll say it's real.
Real.
I'm going to say it's real as well.
Really?
Ah.
It is ridiculous. But you know what is real? He turned down $29 million to star in Elf 2.
Huh.
Gosh, cool. He must have a lot of money to turn down $29 million. You know what I would have done? If even if I had, you know, $200 million and they offered me $29 million to do that movie, I would do it and just give it to charity. Right?
Yeah, you could do that.
Right? Can you imagine? It'd be fun. You could give it $29 million to charity.
Yeah.
All right, here's the next question for you. Speaking of Will Ferrell can be seen in the 1996 film Kingpin yelling out the line, "Ernie, you're the man." Is that real or is that ridiculous, Claudia? What do you think?
I'll say real.
Claudia says real.
I'm trying to think of the scene here, but you know what? I'm going to say real.
All right, you're both saying real?
Yes. All right.
Got it right. Good job. All right, last one. One of his many odd jobs before becoming famous was as a semi-nude dancer in an off-Broadway musical. Is that real or ridiculous, Claudia?
I'll say ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Mike. I'm going to say real.
So Claudia is...
Ah.
And Mike is... That is ridiculous.
It would have made it more interesting if it were real.
But he did not do that. But he did work as a valet at a hotel and a bank teller. So there you go.
Enough.
All right. Well, Claudia, you're a big winner. You win some Twilight Zone CDs, four CDs.
Great.
They'll be mailed out to you. And great job. Great job.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Claudia.
Merry Christmas to you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Claudia.
You.
All right. Great job. Mike, they did better than you.
Yeah, of course.
Contestants did better than you.
As they should.
But you know what? These are tough. I mean, Lisa gets... I think I got 7 out of 9 wrong last week.
Oh, I'm pretty sure the first time I played this, I got none right.
Well, you're improving that. All right. Well, it's time now for Escape. This is a great series, a sister program to Suspense. I mean, they were very similar. They were both on CBS Radio. They both had, like, the best writers and the best stories. The only thing different between Escape and Suspense is Suspense had big movie stars appearing on the show. It just had a bigger budget because it was sponsored, where Escape, for most of its run, it was not sponsored. So they just used radio's pros like William Conrad and, you know, Paul Frees and people like that. But
Frees is the name that I affiliate with Escape.
Paul Frees, yes. Right. He did a lot of the openings on there. But he also played parts as well. And William Conrad is in this particular show. The main star on this program, though, is Terry Kilburn. And it's called The Man Who Liked Dickens from December 21st, 1952. Here's part one of Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are crawling across a jungle savanna, your body flaming with fever, while behind you lies certain death, and ahead, the endless tortures of perpetual imprisonment.
Listen now as Escape brings you Evelyn Waugh's classic story, The Man Who Liked Dickens.
You know what it's like with the English. We're forever going off on curious expeditions into the interiors of strange, dark lands, having unbelievable adventures and returning at last pale and a bit feverish, but triumphant. This we do. But we do not invariably wear rather longish khaki shorts in the daytime. And no matter how primitive our surroundings, dress every night in black tie. I know this from the only exploration I ever went on, with Dr. Messenger, into the Amazon to find a buried city called Demerara. I remember the night things started to go badly with us. It was our last camp on the river. Next day, we were to begin making our way south by foot, and we'd gone to bed early in preparation for the rigors of the trail. I'd been asleep an hour or two when I was wakened by something tugging gently at my toe. I sat up and looked sleepily toward the foot of my hammock, and then I saw what it was.
Johnny! Johnny, what's up? What is it?
Something on my toe. Black beast of some sort.
Johnny, did you fight it off?
It's gone, Doctor. It flew away.
Oh, did it bite you?
Yes, you see, on my great toe.
Yes, vampire bat. You should have gone to sleep with your foot against the mosquito netting. It's a foolish thing to do. No telling how long he was at it before you woke up.
I thought the lamp was supposed to keep him off.
Doesn't seem to have, does it?
No.
Nasty. May have lost quite a bit of blood.
I don't think I like the idea much.
Better put some iodine on it. I'll get one of the boys to bring the medicine chest.
Goosey! Goosey! Here! Makusi! What the devil?
Well, what is it? Where's Makusi?
I'm afraid we're in for it, old boy. They've gone.
Gone?
The boys, all of them.
But why? Where'd they go?
I was afraid of this.
What do you mean?
Well, these chaps are river men. They don't like going into Indian territory. I meant to explain things to them in the morning with the help of some extra goods, you know, mirrors, pomade and the like. Too late now, I expect.
You expect? This is a bloody fine way to run an expedition. Now we're alone, absolutely alone, in this filthy jungle.
Well, what if we are? We'll move on. We have our maps. Takes a bit of poise, that's all.
Poise? Are you mad, Messenger? We can't even get back alone. How can we go on?
Well, the situation is grave, lad, I must admit, but not desperate, not altogether desperate.
I wasn't sure whether Dr. Messenger had lost his mind or if he was merely displaying British calm in the face of disaster. In any event, by morning I was beyond caring very much. When I awoke, my head was flaming with fever. By noon I was slightly delirious. The following day was no better. Dr. Messenger was rather concerned.
How do you feel, lad?
Awful. I'm afraid I'm being a great nuisance.
No, that's not the point. Here, I brought you something to drink.
What is it?
Kasiri. The boys left some outside.
Oh, it's kasiri.
Well, it's a local drink made of fermented cassava.
Oh, will it help me?
Well, it might. You know, it's rather interesting the way they make it. The women chew the root up and they spit it into a hollow tree trunk.
If you don't mind, Doctor, I think I'd rather not.
Well, as you like. Oh, look here. I think I got the idea as to what best for us to do.
Oh?
Yes. I'm going to take the canoe downstream to see if I can find some Indians to help. Best to go immediately, don't you know?
Yes, yes, that's good. All right, I'll come and see you off.
You better stay quiet in your hammock.
No, I'll come straight back, but I want to see you off. It'll be good for my morale, you know, to get myself up a bit.
Perhaps. Well, anyway, I'll be back before tonight. Well, come along. You can sit on the bank and wave goodbye if you like.
I staggered down to the river's edge where I sat with my back against a tree and watched Dr. Messenger launch the canoe and paddle out to midstream. My vision was rather blurred by the fever and I'll never know exactly what happened. But suddenly, the canoe seemed to pitch up and over, throwing Dr. Messenger out into the water. He must have smashed his head on a rock, for he appeared only once on the surface. And then, without a struggle, quickly sank and the water closed over him. I got to my feet, swayed about helplessly for a moment, and then passed out. I remember nothing more until Mr. Todd found me.
Can you see that house over there? Do you think you're able to walk to it? Or if not, I can send some Indians to carry you.
Rotten thing to watch a man drown.
You've been talking to yourself a long time. Such strange talk. Glad to see you coming out of it. Oh, careful there.
Thank you.
I say, you're English. I'm English, too. Last. Tony Last.
Well, Mr. Last, you've been very ill, and you've had a rough time of it, wandering about in the jungle. But I'll take care of you now.
Very kind of you to do this for an utter stranger.
Oh, not at all. I like strangers. Don't get them often.
Perhaps I can repay you somehow when you come to London.
I don't get to London, Mr. Last. But I think you might be able to repay me. Do come along, won't you?
My recovery was slow, but Mr. Todd proved the most patient of nurses. He was forever hovering about, giving me medicines, feeding me, talking to me. I learned that his house was in a village of Indians not far from the riverbank, about 10 miles above the spot from where I'd watched poor Dr. Messenger drown. He owned a few cattle, some bananas and mango trees, a dog, and a single-barreled shotgun. In general, his way of life, like the medicines he gave me, was that of the Indian.
Of course, my mother was an Indian, Mr. Last.
Well, but I thought you were English.
My father was. He went to Guyana as a missionary, but soon came on here to look for gold. He found my mother instead and settled down. I was born here. 60 years in this village. Very long and lonely time.
I can well imagine.
Of course, most of the men and women living in the savannah are my relatives.
Is that why you are more or less the ruler here?
For that reason, and because I have the shotgun.
Oh, of course.
Tell me, Mr. Last, can you read?
Yes, certainly.
Not everyone is so fortunate. For example, I cannot.
What? Oh, of course. Still, I don't suppose you have much opportunity here.
Oh, yes, that's just it. I have a great many books. I'll show you when you're better. My father left them.
Well, I'd be delighted to see them.
You shall.
Of course.
You see, my father was a man of education. He read to me all the time.
But since he died?
Oh, there was nobody for a number of years. And then another Englishman came. He read to me every day, every single day.
Another Englishman? But where is he now?
I don't know.
Well, how long was he here?
I don't remember exactly. But he read to me every day. You shall read to me when you're better.
I'd be delighted to, Mr. Todd.
Oh, yes. You shall read to me.
Mr. Todd had a curious way of putting things. But he was much too kind and selfless in his attentions to me to allow my thinking any ill of him. Still, he did give me a turn one day when we were talking a short walk around the village. It was the first time I'd left the house since the fever had gone.
You'll find the Indians quite friendly here, but I'd keep apart from them if I were you.
But why? If they want to be friendly.
Things aren't always quite as they appear to be here in the jungle, Mr. Lass.
Well, I'll go slow, if that's what you mean.
That's not exactly what I mean.
I say, what's that?
What?
There, between those mango trees, that mound of dirt.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to be a grave.
It is. Oh, of course.
Your father?
No. Barnabas is buried there. Barnabas Washington.
Barnabas?
Yes, the Englishman. I told you about him.
You mean the one who was here? Who read to you so much?
Oh, he read beautifully, Barnabas did.
But look here, Mr. Todd, you told me you didn't know where he was.
Well, I don't. Do you?
Eh? Oh, I see. Rather an odd way of putting it, I must say. Tell me, Mr. Todd, how long was he here, Barnabas Washington?
Quite a long time.
I know, but exactly how long?
Oh, I don't keep much track of time down here. You know how it is.
At any rate, he never got home. He died here.
Oh, yes, and he was so very kind. Every afternoon, for 2 hours, he used to read to me.
Well, I suppose it was a good way to pass the time. Seems rather odd, though. I mean, reading here in the heart of the jungle, lost, so to speak, from the world.
Oh, I suppose it does, but one gets used to it.
Of course.
You know, it seems a pity poor Barnaby's grave isn't marked.
I think so.
Yes, I think I'll put up a cross. In fact, I'll put up two of them. One to commemorate his death, and the other your arrival.
A cross for me? I'm afraid I don't quite understand.
Well, it's just a whim, Mr. Long.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude.
Of course. And now, Mr. Last, I think you've recovered your strength sufficiently that we may begin tonight. What do you say?
Begin tonight?
Hmm.
Oh, my reading, is that it?
Yes, that's it, Mr. Noss, that's it.
All right, if you like.
Oh, you know I've been waiting a long time for this. A dreadfully long time.
And that night, the horror began. My subtle, unbelievable enslavement to the strange madness of the gentle Mr. Todd.
All righty, we'll get back to Escape with a Man Who Liked Dickens from December 21st, 1952 in just a few moments. All right, well, we're here every Saturday and Sunday night playing your favorite classic radio shows, all your favorites, The Shadow, Suspense, Gunsmoke, Have Gun Will Travel, Gangbusters, Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Johnny Dollar. I know Mike loves Johnny Dollar. We have Inner Sanctum Mysteries, Lights Out. Yeah, Baby Snooks and Daddy, The Bickersons, The Lone Ranger. You name it, we have it here on Saturday and Sunday nights right here on the greatest radio station on the planet, WGN. We start things off at 11:05. We run till 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays, and then we're here for 2 hours on Sunday nights. We're only here till 1 o'clock. We start at 11, but we play 5 half-hour shows or a combination thereof. Like tonight when we come back here, Mike and I will be back here at 11 p.m. We'll go to 1 o'clock, and we will play an hour-long radio dramatization of the Miracle on 34th Street movie, and it has the original star, Edmund Gwenn, who won an Academy Award for that role, and that's on the Screen Directors Playhouse, but it's an hour-long version.
Yep.
Screen Directors Playhouse was, for many, many years, a half-hour show, but then one season it became, you know, expanded to an hour, and that's where we have that Miracle on 34th Street for you, so you won't want to miss that. Tonight, when we come back here, great broadcast, and it's celebrating Christmas. And I hope everybody has a wonderful Christmas this year. We're going to kick it off tomorrow with Miracle on 34th Street, one of the best Christmas movies of all time.
Very good.
What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Oh, God, I don't know. I've been seeing a lot of Home Alone lately.
Home Alone's
Denise,
great.
She loves that as a Christmas film. So.
Oh, yeah. Those are great.
She bought, a book recently, Home Alone, I don't know if it's like a children's book or whatever, but it was
so
like
she's really into it.
Yeah, really is.
Wow. Yeah. So, well, my favorite Christmas movie of all time is Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah, cool.
I just think it's just great. I mean, you know, I'm a big believer in Santa Claus, and I think Santa Claus lives in all of us, you know. And this was such a great movie because it proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that there really is a Santa Claus.
There you go.
And they did that in a terrific movie, and we have a radio broadcast of it tonight when we come back here at 11 p.m. Also, of course, It's a Wonderful Life is great, and A Christmas Carol is great. I'm trying to think.
White Christmas.
White Christmas is great. You know what else is really terrific? Yeah, you're right, White Christmas. Another great Christmas movie, Elf.
Yep.
Love Elf. Mm-hmm. James Caan in Elf makes that movie. I mean, Will Ferrell's fabulous, of course. I mean, he's tremendous in that movie. But James Caan just kills me in that movie. I think he's hilarious as the dad. So what other great Christmas movies? Mm. Roger? Off the top of your head, no.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. A Christmas Story.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I can't believe I forgot that. A Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ralphie.
Die Hard.
There you go.
Yeah, I heard.
You know, that's always like the debatable one. Everyone had
but
the people
did you see
say,
what happened?
What?
No. This past week, the movie company that owns the movie re-edited a promo for the movie to make it be the greatest Christmas story of all time. I'm not kidding. There's a 30-second spot for it.
Really?
And they've re-edited all the stuff to make it sound like it's really a Christmas story.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Since Mike said A Christmas Story, I would have to say that's my number two favorite.
Okay.
It's my number two favorite Christmas movie. But I don't really think of Die Hard as one, but Die Hard is. I mean,
Yeah, they were having a Christmas party at the building.
Oh, yeah. When the terrorists took over.
And, you know, it's kind of weird because it takes place in California, mm-hmm. and so there's no snow.
Yeah.
But they're having a Christmas party.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of weird that nobody said, what do you mean it's Christmas?
Well, here, wake up call. Christmas is celebrated in California.
Well, I know. Hello. I know that. I'm just saying, there's no snow or anything in there. The only thing that would make it look like a Christmas.
So it has to snow to celebrate Christmas?
Well, it would help since there's only like a few scenes at the party
where
there's some decorations.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess it could be raining since our Christmas is going to have rain.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it could be any kind of weather and it could be Christmas.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. All right, well, we have to go to news.
Silver bells, it's Christmas time in the city.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
You know, I was watching Jeopardy. I tape Jeopardy, you know, and I watch it. Yeah, and there was a question. They played.
And answer me. You mean an answer
you
first.
Would have had it.
Okay.
So there's three smart people up there, right, playing
mm-hmm.
Jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, and they were getting tons of questions. And one was a song, it was duos or something like that.
Okay.
And one was a song that had Bing Crosby, it was a road picture that had Bing Crosby and Bob Hope singing.
Okay.
Right? And they play it, and it's like, chirp, 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 chirp. These three people are up there. Nobody rings in. And I'm just thinking to myself, Bob Hope and Bing Crosby, and these people don't know.
Oh, they wanted to know who the two guys were.
Yeah, they're like, name these two singers. You know, they played
How
the song.
How old were the people guessing?
I mean, like.
Was anyone at least 50?
50s, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they.
They couldn't get it?
No, they didn't even ring in.
Oh,
and I'm like hitting my
You're
remote
hitting
control,
TV?
You know.
Oh, the remote. I didn't know you could play that way.
Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. You know? Yeah.
You would have gotten it wrong, though.
But you know what it's like to be sitting there?
Yeah, of course I
Bob
do.
Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. And they even said a road picture duo, you know?
Mm.
Oh, gosh.
But you would have gotten it wrong. You know why?
Hmm.
You didn't form your answer in the form of a question.
Who is?
Who is?
Who is Bob Hope and Bing Crosby?
There you go.
That's why we do what we do here, Roger.
Go.
It's
that's
why
right.
we have this show as an homage to these great, talented mm-hmm. people from the golden age of radio, film, TV.
You know, if those people were to be listening to the show,
mm-hmm.
they would have gotten that right.
They would have gotten it
yes.
right. Well, we're on KRLA out there in Los
there
Angeles.
Go.
We Our syndicated show airs on KRLA.
What are these people?
What is their
nuts?
Problem? Are they
I
crazy?
Don't
I don't know. All right, let's get back now to Escape.
That evening after supper, Mr. Todd led me into his room where we were to begin reading. From a loft at one end of the hut, he took down a number of small bundles tied up with rag, palm leaves, and rawhide. We carried them over to the fire, and he began to unwrap them with feverish anticipation.
You choose one, Mr. Loft. It doesn't matter which one to take first. Please, choose. what do you have there?
This? The quick paper.
Excellent. Let's begin with that, shall we?
Well, isn't there something a little more lively, perhaps?
Oh, I have everything here. How about Martin Chuzzlewit or Great Expectations?
Well, I was thinking of a more modern author somehow. I don't suppose you'd have a copy of, say, South Wind.
South Wind? Oh, that's odd. I have everything Dickens ever wrote, but I've never heard of that.
Oh, but it's not by Dickens, you see.
Oh, well, in that case, I don't have it.
You mean all these books are by Dickens?
Oh, certainly.
You must be quite fond of Dickens.
Fond? Far more than that. Far more than fond, Mr. Last.
Oh.
You see, these are the only books I've ever known or heard. As I told you, they belonged to my father, and he used to read them to me. And then later, Barnabas Washington.
And now me.
And now you. But don't worry, I never get tired, even though I've heard them all several times by now. You see, oh, there's always more to be learned, noticed. So many characters, so many changes of scene, so many words. Takes a long time to read them all. More than 2 years.
Well, in that case, they'll certainly last out my visit.
Oh, I hope not. I sincerely hope not. It's delightful to start again. Each time I find more to enjoy and admire. But come, let's begin, shall we?
Well, all right.
Yes, and read slowly now. I don't want to miss anything. And you won't mind going back over certain passages, will you? I'll let you know when we can.
Of course.
Now, let's begin.
The Posthumous Papers of the Pickwick Club. Yeah. Chapter 1. The Pickwickians. The first ray of light which illumines the gloom and converts into a dazzling brilliancy that obscurity in which the earlier history of the public career of the immortal Pickwick would appear to be involved, is derived from the perusal of the following entry in the transactions of the Pickwick Club, which the editor of these papers feels the highest pleasure in laying before his readers as proof of... As I continue to read, the old man frequently interrupted with questions or comments or requests that I reread a favorite passage. His delight was rather contagious. But by the time we were on the fourth volume, the novelty had begun to wane. And anyway, I was feeling strong enough to be restless. More than once I brought up the subject of my departure. But Mr. Todd seemed obtuse and paid no attention. Finally, one day, he actually became a bit menacing about it. I had just finished a chapter of Bleak House and was resting my eyes for a moment.
You know, Mr. Lass, you read even better than my father. Even better, I might add, than Mr. Washington.
Well, we still have a lot to get through. I hope I shall be able to finish it before I leave.
Oh, yes, don't disturb yourself about that. You'll have time to finish it, my friend.
Look, Mr. Todd, the time's come when I really must be thinking of getting back to civilization. I've already imposed on you much too long.
Oh, not at all, Mr. Lass. It's been a pleasure, a great pleasure.
I know, but still... How soon do you think I'll be able to get a boat?
A boat?
Yes, to go downriver.
Oh.
No, you know I appreciate all your kindness more than I can say.
Oh, Mr. Last, any kindness I may have shown is amply repaid by your reading of Dickens. Do not let us mention the subject again.
Well, I'm very glad you've enjoyed it, but I really must be thinking of getting back.
Oh, yes, the other Englishman's like that, too. He thought about it all the time. But he died here, poor chap.
Mr. Todd, how long was he here, the other Englishman?
Oh, now I don't recall exactly. We pay so little attention to time down here, you know.
Well, did he read all of Dickens to you?
A long time ago. But I do remember Dombey and Son 3 or 4 times.
3 or 4 times?
Hmm.
But you said it took 2 years each time to go all through.
Yes, about that.
Mr. Todd, why did he stay here all those years?
Well, I don't know. I never asked.
But there must have been some reason.
Well, he never said.
All right. But I really must press the point. When can I get a boat?
There is no boat.
Well, then the Indians can build one.
Well, you must wait for the rains. There isn't enough water in the river now.
Well, how long would that be?
Oh, a month, 2 months.
All right, then. I'll wait a month or two.
Of course. Now, let's get on. Now, it's so interesting what Dickens has to say about the law's delay. Bleak House has always been such a favorite of mine.
And so, in spite of everything, at least I knew what I was waiting for. And so it only remained for the rains to begin. I waited as patiently as I could, living with gaudy dreams of my return to England. Until one day, as we were reading, Mr. Todd explained all that away.
I think Mrs. Jellyby does not take enough care of her children.
But still, Dickens has great sympathy for her. He'd been poor himself, you know. What's that? Listen.
Yes, shall we go on now?
Rain. The rain has begun, Mr. Todd.
Of course, it's the time for it, but do let's finish that chapter.
No, no, later. I must go and talk to the Indians about building a boat. I can leave now, don't you see?
Oh?
Certainly, the river will be full soon, and in a week I'll be off.
Oh, I'm afraid that's impossible, Mr. Lass.
Impossible? Why?
Oh, the Indians won't make a boat during the rainy season. It's one of their superstitions.
Is that true?
Ask them.
I think you might have told me.
You didn't ask?
Why didn't you mention it then?
That's a pose. You've forgotten nothing, Mr. Todd. I'm satisfied now that you're holding me here against my will. I demand to be released.
Of course, you're perfectly free.
Now look here. You've saved my life. And when I get back to civilization, I'll reward you to the best of my ability. I'll give you anything within reason.
But, my friend, there's nothing keeping you here. You're under no restraint.
I demand to be released.
Then go when you like.
Stop that. You know very well I can't get away without your help.
Then in that case, you must humor an old man. Read me the rest of the chapter.
No, Mr. Todd. I've read for the last time.
Oh, I hope not, Mr. Last. Oh, I sincerely hope not.
That evening at supper, only one plate of dried meat was brought in, and Mr. Todd ate alone. Next day at noon, a single plate was again put before him, but with it lay his gun, cocked on his knee as he ate. And so I resumed the reading of Blake House, where it had been interrupted. And then, as though to make my situation even clearer to me, I came upon a scrawled note stuck between the book's pages, and I read it with growing horror.
Hmm? What is it, Mr. Last? What have you there?
This document. It was here in the book.
Document? What document?
Don't you know? Then I shall read it to you, Mr. Todd.
Well, if you like. It seems a pity to interrupt Dickens, though.
Year 1930. I, James Todd of Brazil, do swear to Barnabas Washington of Georgetown that when he finishes this book, in fact Martin Chuzzlewit, I will let him return to civilization without delay. Then there's an X, and after it, Mr. Todd made this mark. Signed, Barnabas Washington.
Ah, yes, poor Barnabas. He died before he could get out.
And if I remember, the marker you put up, he died in 1942. Is that right, Mr. Todd?
Excuse me, Mr. Last. I nearly forgot something. I meant to mention it earlier.
Yes?
The Indians tell me that you were trying to speak to them this morning.
I was.
Of course. But may I suggest that it would be easier for you to say anything you wish through me? You realize, do you not, that they do nothing without my authority. They regard themselves, and quite rightly in many cases, as my children.
I have nothing to hide. I was asking them about a boat.
So they gave me to understand. And now, if we've finished, do let's get on with our reading. I'm quite absorbed in the book.
We finished Bleak House, and Oliver Twist, and Great Expectations, and Nicholas Nickleby, the old curiosity shop, Little Dorrit, Edwin Drood. More than a year passed, and Mr. Todd began looking forward to starting all over again. The empty days followed one another in hopeless succession. Until one morning, a stranger suddenly arrived in the savannah. A prospector. One of that lonely order of men who wander for a lifetime through the forest, tracing the streams for gold. Mr. Todd was out, puttering about on business for the farm, when the man appeared. I found him a plate of meat and farina and eagerly sat down at the table across from him.
Nice setup you got here.
Look here. Where are you bound for?
Manaus. Need a new outfit.
You've got to do something for me. It's terribly important.
Well, sure, pal. What is it?
Yeah. Take this. Give it to somebody in Manaus. The police, the mayor, or somebody. Tell him you found me. And to get in touch with the British consul.
Well, I ain't gonna get in trouble with this, am I?
No. Look. This isn't my home. I'm a member of the Messenger expedition. Dr. Messenger was drowned, and I've been held prisoner here ever since. You're my only hope of ever getting out. You understand?
You sound like a jungle head to me, but I'll do it for you if that's what you want.
Oh, you must. You must, please.
Well, one thing, though.
What?
Wouldn't it be simpler if you just came along with me?
No, I am afraid not.
Why?
First, there are Mr. Todd's Indians. I can't take two steps into the jungle without one of them after me.
No.
And then Mr. Todd has a shotgun.
You mustn't mind Mr. Last, my friend. Touch a fever, you know.
This is Mr. Todd. Perhaps you see what I mean.
I warned you about getting up too soon, Mr. Last. It's my guess you're going to have a time of it now.
I have no fever, and you know it.
Well, you boys settle this between yourselves. I've got to shove on enough. Thanks for lunch.
But you will...
Like I said, why not? Don't bother to see me off. So long.
You're going to let him go?
Of course. Oh, come, Mr. Last, I think we're going to begin Little Dorrit today. I'm most anxious to hear it again.
From then on, there was hope. And as the weeks passed, I endured each day in confident anticipation of what might happen on the morrow. I even felt a slight stirring of cordiality towards my jailer. And therefore, I quite willingly joined him when one evening he proposed that we attend a native feast. There was a lot of singing in an apathetic, monotonous manner. And then we were given a small calabash of puwari to drink. It was a pleasant beverage with a flavor of honey and brown bread. And etiquette required that we drink it down without lowering the gourd. I had several, and soon after grew warm and drowsy, and dozed happily off in a hammock, dreaming of fine claret and the white cliffs of England.
Mr. Last, Mr. Last, you better come and eat something. You will starve to death here.
My head. I must have been quite tight last night. Treacherous drink there.
Now, how do you feel?
Rotten. That drink doesn't seem to agree with me.
Well, I'll give you something to make you better. The forest has remedies for everything to make you awake and to make you sleep.
I say, you haven't seen my watch anywhere.
You've missed it?
Yes, I thought I was wearing it. You know I've never slept so long.
Not since you were a baby. Do you know how long?
No.
2 days.
Oh, nonsense, I can't.
Two whole days. And it's a pity, too, because you missed our guests.
Yes.
Oh, I've been quite gay while you were asleep. 3 men from outside, Englishmen. Pity you missed them, and a pity for them, too. They particularly wished to see you.
No.
Yes, they came all the way to find you, all the way from England. But since you couldn't greet them yourself, I gave them a little souvenir. Your watch.
My watch?
All right.
You gave them my watch?
You shouldn't mind. You see, they had to have something to take back with them. A reward is being offered for news of you. They seem very pleased
of it. You couldn't. Even you. It's like killing them.
And they took some photographs of the little cross I put up to commemorate your coming, but not before I put another date on it, you know.
You did. You killed me, didn't you? You killed me.
I think, in general, they were quite pleased, but I don't suppose they'll visit us again. Our life here is so retired, no pleasures except reading. No, I don't suppose you'll ever have visitors again. But come, come, your head aches. I'll get the medicine for you. You're just upset.
Look.
We won't have any Dickens today.
My whole life.
But tomorrow and the day after and the day after that. Do let us read Little Dorrit again, Mr. Last. I tell you, there are passages in that book I can never hear without the temptation to weep.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you The Man Who Liked Dickens by Evelyn Waugh, especially adapted for Escape by John Meston, and starring Terry Kilburn as Tony, with Joseph Kearns as Mr. Todd. Featured in the cast were Ramsey Hill and Joe Cranston. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, America is listening with 14 million kitchen radios. And listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
That is Escape with The Man Who Liked Dickens, starring Terry Kilburn, also Joseph Kearns in that cast, from December 21st, 1952, as heard on CBS.